SF is mostly a human drive disease, because it's not, it's a disease that is very clumsy when it comes to transmit from animal to animal. It's very infectious, but it's clumsy. We have seen that in not here in Spain, but colleagues that have experience working with this disease, either experimentally or in the field in other countries, they say that the disease is not, it doesn't spread very fast, even when it infects a farm. So it's a clumsy disease. So this is the most likely source of infection, that somebody brought some contaminated material, in this case food, and because it needs to have like high concentrations of virus. And this is why we believe that somebody tossed some food outside of the garbage bin, and maybe, you know, in an area where you have wild boar, maybe some of them or one of them eat that contaminated food, and this is how the disease started.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. When it comes to 25-hydroxy D3 products, purity matters. Hy-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Learn more at hy-d.info. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Welcome to another episode of the Swine It Canada podcast show, brought to you by Wisenetics. So we are dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the Canadian pork industry. So I'm Miranda Smith, and I'll be the host for today's episode. And with me today, I have Dr. Carlos Villalta, who is a researcher in epidemiology at Irta Cresa in Spain. So welcome to the show, Carlos.
Hello, Miranda. Thank you for having me here and for the invitation. It's a pleasure for me to participate in your show.
Yeah, awesome. And we're going to be talking about ASF today, and specifically the ASF situation in Spain. But before we do that, can you first give us a little bit of an introduction to your background and your current role?
Sure. I'm a veterinarian by training. I finished my DVM in the year 2000. And then I was working for different companies, swine production companies, having different roles for a while, until I got some interest in pursuing learning more on how to develop clinical trials or extract more information out of the field. This is when I started a PhD that I completed in 2014. And then after a while, I decided to pursue an international experience. And I moved to Minnesota to work in epidemiology and with the University of Minnesota, which is one of the top groups working in that area. And then after that, after some years in the States, I returned to Spain and I joined the Irta Cresa. And now I'm coordinating the epidemiology team.
Looking to boost the productivity and health of your swine herd? Hy-D is the original pure source of 25-hydroxy D3, proven in over 100 research trials and fed to millions of pigs each year in North America. Hy-D improves bone strength, immune health, and enhances overall performance. Whether you want to improve sow longevity, get heavier nursery pigs, or help your grow-finish pigs thrive, trust the original, pure, proven 25-hydroxy D3, Hy-D. Learn more at hy-d.info.
Okay, and so what does the epidemiologic team do at Irta Cresa?
So we cover many areas. We give support to the regional government of Catalonia in many diseases. So for example, we are working with surveillance with influenza, African swine fever. Right now, we also have this outbreak of lumpy skin disease, which is something that also we are collaborating. But also not also that, we are doing research. In this case, I my main topic of interest is PERS, is one of the main topics, the swine industry and PERS. And I have two broader lines of research, one working with syndromic surveillance using mortality to foresee abnormal mortality events. And then the other one is more working with PERS and understanding the disease, the epidemiology of the disease in Catalonia or in Spain, and then understanding how we can apply vaccines better, and many different roles. Also, in the team there are people working with wildlife. In this case, for example, we are working the topic that we are talking to is there are people working with African swine fever, trying to understand how the disease might evolve. But also we have some other people with broader skills, and they are looking, for example, at the weather, what is the impact of the weather and the climate change to livestock mortality, or what would be in the future.
Right. Okay. So let's now dive into ASF. So I think everyone knows that Spain got some cases of ASF recently. So can you give us a little bit of a background on when did it come, and do we have any idea how it got into Spain?
Yes. The first cases of ASF were reported at the end of November of the last year, 2025. And then after all the investigations that have been going on from the ministry, the most likely origin of this disease would be introduction of contaminated material, most likely food. This is what we believe. Some other possible routes have been discarded, or they have been put away because they are not that likely as the one. What made us think that this has been this way is because the virus was sequenced, and it was compared to all the available sequences that there are in the references lab. And the sequences that are closer to this one are sequences coming from the east of Europe or Asia. So those are the ones that are closer, which doesn't mean that they are the same, to this sequence. We couldn't find any other sequence that is similar to this sequence in Europe. So we believe that it might come from that area of the world, and where there's a gap in knowledge of the circulating ASF strains.
Okay, so it probably then jumped from, say, Asia or Eastern Europe into Spain, someone brought pork then, or?
ASF is mostly a human-derived disease. Yeah. Because it's a disease that is very clumsy when it comes to transmit from animal to animal. It's very infectious, but it's clumsy. We have seen that in not here in Spain, but colleagues that have experience working with this disease, either experimentally or in the field in other countries, they say that the disease is not, it doesn't spread very fast, even when it infects a farm. So it's a clumsy disease. So this is the most likely source of infection, that somebody brought some contaminated material, in this case food, and because it needs to have high concentrations of virus. And this is why we believe that somebody tossed some food outside of the garbage bin, and maybe in an area where you have wild boar, maybe some of them or one of them eat that contaminated food, and this is how the disease started. I mean, this is the most likely possibility.
And then how has it been spreading since then?
Since then, it is slowly spreading. The regional government and the government of Spain, they have put lots of effort in containing the disease. And initially, it was located in one area, which the disease is contained. But then there was another focus that it took some weeks to detect outside of this specific area, and the disease has been spreading slowly since then. However, the disease can be contained within an area where there are many roads, and these roads and railways can act as a barrier, so they don't let wild boar to cross it. So they have, you know, all the bridges and all the underground paths have been blocked. So that will help to control the disease only in that specific area, which is around Barcelona.
And so far, is it only in wild boar, or has there been any cases in commercial farms?
So far, it has been only detected in wild boar. All the commercial farms that are in the area have been tested multiple times. You know, they are continuously testing all those animals in those farms, and so far, you know, everything is negative.
Okay, so can you talk a little bit more about how the disease is behaving in general and specifically in your area?
Well, the disease is a high virulent virus that causes hemorrhages, and it causes high mortality. This is, you know, how the virus behaves in other areas, and here we cannot think that it's behaving differently so far with the information that we have. It is true that, you know, there's a gap in the DNA that affects one specific region, that it might decrease its virulence, or it has some affectation to the response, like the host virus interaction and the immune system. But so far, what we have seen is there's 100% mortality. I mean, we couldn't find any positive animal that had ELISAs, and it might take a little more, but we don't know how much more to kill the animal. But we're gonna test that, and we're gonna do clinical trials just to check if this is a little less virulent in terms of it is taking more to kill the animal than not killing it. Because right now, you know, 100% of the animals that got infected are dead.
Okay, so do you test the other wild boar in the area, or like how do you know that the others are not infected?
So there's many, actually, you know, there's a lot of effort, like. First of all, trying to remove all the carcasses of the animals, of the dead animals, because this is the most important source of contamination for the live wild boars that are in the area. So there's a lot of effort in doing that, but also there's a lot of effort in capturing and removing live animals from the area, because there's a density, I think. The government and the authorities, what they're trying to do is like to decrease the wild boar density in the area, so it's more difficult that the disease can be spread, and so we can protect better the swine industry in the country.
Right. Now, I think in the past, when Spain had an outbreak of ASF, I think it was traced back to a lab, if I'm correct.
In the past, no.
No?
No.
Okay.
In the past, we had ASF. It was a genotype 1. You know, there's 24 genotypes of African swine fever virus. This was the genotype 1. It caused a pandemic worldwide. And Spain had it until the 90s. And we eradicated the virus. It was located at the south of Spain. Right now, we have a genotype 2. Is a different virus than the previous one that it was here in Spain, and it started in 2007 in Georgia, and then from there it spread to all Europe and all Asia. And this is the current one that we have right now. But one of the hypotheses and that this virus appeared in Spain in the area that is located, one of the hypotheses was that it was from a labscape. Because we have one lab, which is Irtacresa, that has a BSL-3 facility. We in the lab, we were working with ASF from around 20 years, working in immunology of ASF, understanding, you know, the very basics of ASF and trying to develop a vaccine. And the first thought, or one of the first hypotheses, was that the virus had escaped from the lab. However, all the sequences, like all the most relevant sequences used in the last field clinical trials in the lab, you know, were sequenced and were compared with the one existing in the field. And there's no relationship between the sequence that is in the field and the sequences that we have in the lab. So, and this has been done at least a couple of times, one from the Catalan government and another one from the Spanish government. So we are sure that the virus didn't escape from the lab.
That's good. But it, in the end, like as you say, like it's a human tracking, like that's mostly the problem. So are there increased efforts to make sure that people don't bring in pork and other materials that are infected?
I guess the authorities are putting warnings outside in the airports and everything, just to warn people that be aware of African swine fever. I don't know if all, you know, people understand this concept. Sometimes, you know, people who is not related with the swine industry, I don't think that they understand this concept about bringing pork into another country. But again, I think you are always at risk of somebody introducing a piece of pork, because not also from foreign countries outside Europe, but also we have to remember that in Europe we have free transit of people and goods, right? And we have ASF in Europe. So, I mean, it doesn't need to come from China or any other Asian country, but it can come from any, you know, European country, just a tourist bringing something, or just going on vacation, or just a, you know, truck driver having some food for his trip.
Well, and I was just thinking about that, because of course, like in Canada, we are somewhat privileged in the sense that most people will have to fly here to come here. Unless they're coming from the States, but then they still have to cross a border where you're being checked. So, you know, to get into Canada, hopefully people will come and see those signs, because we have the same thing. Like I've seen the signs on at the airports, but it's also very easy to pass the sign and not even read it, because how many signs are there in the airport that you don't read, right? It's a little overwhelming. But yeah, like in Europe, there's so much just free, like there's no border controls between countries. So you can drive from France straight into Spain, and like if someone brings something in their car.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think this is why we need to educate people, and we need to make sure that, you know, people understand why this disease is important. But just to name a country that is close, I mean, Italy has African swine fever. So, you know, anybody from Italy that have any product that is contaminated with African swine fever, you know, can drive to any other country. And if it's your food, nobody can tell anything. Or even, you know, if you're selling this and it has gone a legal way without being detected, it's still completely legal.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, it adds a difficulty to, like, eradicating it altogether. But like now that it is in Spain, like how do you see it going forward? Like, do you think that this is going to be around for a long time, or do you think you're going to be able to eradicate it?
That's a million-dollar question.
Yes.
I would say that I'm a realist optimist, but I think it could take some months to eradicate the disease from the country. I don't know how many months. I don't know it is going to be, you know, 10 more months or 20 more months. But if the disease doesn't escape this area where it is contained now, I think it's a matter of months. It's going to be hard work, because it's not an easy disease to eradicate. But I think it is possible. I think other countries have shown us the way. And I think this is why we're trying to learn from experiences from other countries like Belgium or Sweden, that they have eradicated the disease in a fairly quick time.
So, are there any new insights on like how to be able to do that?
No, I think it's a matter of you know, working hard in the field, the people that are working in the field, putting some efforts in finding those carcasses and removing the wild boar. I think those are the two key questions to this. They are trying to empty the area from, you know, from wild boars, because they are the ones that are keeping the disease, and that is the risk that it can escape. But also, you know, cleaning the forest and all the, you know, areas where you can find those carcasses. I think that is the other way that they are focusing right now.
So lots of work ahead, but hopefully with a positive outcome.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So like, is there anything else related to the ASF that you would like to talk about today?
Well, I think the area where this happened is a urban area, which also I think in a way might facilitate things, but in another way it might complicate things, because when it happens to a rural area, I think it's you can really close that specific area, fence it, and work in a more intense way, while when you're in an urban area, I think it is not that easy, right? Because fencing sometimes might involve like not letting people walk in that specific area, and of course if they live in a city or in an urban area, they want to walk the dog, take a ride with a bike. I don't know. And this, I think, is the complicated part. But hopefully, you know, all the neighbors will understand that this is a difficult situation for the swine sector, and I think they would collaborate.
And like it sounds like Spain did have some compartmentalization agreements in place, like right before the outbreak. Mm-hmm. So I guess how hard has the commercial industry been hit?
I think they're hit very hard, especially the exports. Luckily, there are some institutions working, you know, the swine industry, working very hard to find the agreements to continue exporting, to compartmentalize the country, or at least the area, and so they can continue exporting. But the industry, you know, we are, I think, the top three exporter of pork in the world. So obviously we've been hit pretty hard in terms of the economic impact that this disease is causing to the swine industry.
Okay, so fingers crossed it can be eradicated quickly.
Sure, sure. No, you know, everybody is hoping that, everybody is working towards that, like to help the authorities and also the swine industry to protect the farms from ISF. I mean, biosecurity, I think, is key, especially in this disease, not in all diseases, but especially this one, because, again, this is a very clumsy disease. It is not airborne. It is not easily transmitted unless you have a high viral load of viruses. So in this case, you know, keep up biosecurity, all the measures, shower in, shower out, you know, change clothes if visiting any farms. And other than that, I think if everything works well, the disease will be just focused on the wild boar population.
It's time for our famous three.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you for that. So to our listeners, like if you're enjoying this episode of the Swine at Canada podcast show, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your colleagues, friends, and family. Okay, so then we are getting to the final three questions, which is always the same for all our guests. So the first one is like, what is your favorite swine-related book or resource?
But I guess that, you know, one of my favorite resources is the diseases of swine. I think that is the Bible for all the diseases, and it's very handy when it comes to consult some information. I would say that currently I'm using a lot ChatGPT, which is also very handy, just to summarize the main topics of disease or you know, something that you're looking regarding swine.
yeah, I think like the options with ChatGPT are endless.
Yeah.
Okay, so like what is your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
I don't know. Actually, I'm reading a lot of children books because of my children or kid books. But I always, you know, this might be a classic and it's not very original, but 1984 from George Orwell, this is a book that, you know, had an impact on me when I read it, and it's still one of the books that I remember the most, and I don't know, all the ideas and everything that they describe in that book. Sometimes I think that they apply, you know, very well today or in the near future.
Yes, no, for sure. And then the last question is, like, in your opinion, what sets successful swine professionals apart from those that are not?
Being curious. I think being curious, being empathetic, like listening, for example, to farmers, or listening just to, you know, different people that work in the swine industry. I think that's the most relevant one, because then you can learn, you know, what are the needs of other colleagues that you might have, or the farmer, or, you know, your clients, or even your mates working in the same company. I think, you know, you need to be very empathetic, and also, you know, be very open-minded to learn new things, and to keep implementing new technologies or you know, new vaccines or new treatments.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that one. So, okay, well, thank you so much for joining me on the Swine Aid Podcast show today.
No, perfect. Thank you again for inviting me. It was my pleasure.
So that concludes another episode of the Swine Aid Canada Podcast show presented by Wisenetics. So don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to stay updated on future episodes. So thanks everyone for listening. Until next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.